It's the end of June 2006, and we're looking at all the latest happenings in the Mac world.
We interview Neil Tichton, publisher and editor-in-chief of MacTech Magazine.
My Mac Podcast 88.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com Podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
Good morning, sports racers, to MyMac.com.
No, that's not this show.
That's worth a shot.
Yeah, well, I wish one of us had the talent of Ze Frank.
Yeah, that's true.
Ze Frank. A lot of people that are listening are going, what the hell are they talking about? Figure it out.
Just do a Google on the show.
Ze Frank. You'll enjoy it. Got a lot of, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 newsworthy items that we're going to cover this week.
Yep.
And beyond that, I don't know. Don't know what we're going to do this week.
I guess it's going to be a surprise podcast.
It's going to be a surprise.
This could be really boring.
Surprise. Surprise. Wow, did you really just download this podcast? What the heck were you thinking? This segment sponsored by Ramjet.
True, it is.
It is sponsored by Ramjet. If you guys are looking for RAM, obviously, think Ramjet.
Yep. Best RAM prices around. Also got thumb drives and hard drives.
You know, if you've got a Mac and you've got less than a gig, go to Ramjet. Buy some new RAM. You really, really do need some. And they got it for older Macs, newer Macs, Intel Macs, PowerPC Macs.
That brings me to one of the peeves I was thinking about this morning.
Yeah.
256 meg RAM chips. Yeah. What are they good for anymore?
Pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, at the very least, you should be... If you've got two slots in your machine, and you're putting two 256 chips in each one, it's... What a joke. Oh, you get 512 when you buy this machine. Well, yeah, thanks, but if I want to upgrade, I have to completely throw away these.
And that is the sad part, because I've got two sitting right here...
That are worthless.
Right, and I've got one in my iBook, and when I upgrade that to a 512, also worthless. What are you going to do with it? You can't sell it.
No. Who's going to buy it?
Nobody.
Nobody. Unless you could find one idiot on eBay who goes, I could buy a 256 megabyte chip
and stick it in my extra slot on my iBook. Oh, I don't have one.
Oh, I only got one. Do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, it's... Yeah. What do you do with old RAM? There's a lot of old RAM floating around. And
well, if it's for an older Mac and somebody has an affinity for them, there may be a small market for that. But if it's for a more recent model, and that's what I was thinking of, like an iBook that somebody still uses,
yeah,
it's useless. No one's going to want it.
No, it's worth upgrading your RAM.
Yes,
because you get so much better performance out of your machine.
We've been huge advocates of that on this show.
Yeah, so what do you do with your old RAM? You know. You would think maybe we can melt it down and make a bigger RAM chip.
Yeah, you would wish.
Something.
I took my two 256 chips and melted them into one gooey 512. Wax and crayon stuff sticking together.
Take all these RAM chips and somehow make a little MP3 out of it. It's RAM.
You could. That's true, you could.
Because as soon as it lost power, it would lose whatever is on the chip. I don't know, something. You would think somebody would come up with something. You know,
an MP3 player with a plug-in cord and a huge extension cord leading to the house. Hey, guys. Dude, what's that big orange cord hanging out of your pants?
Just happy to see you. No, but, you know, when you think about it, they keep talking about making cheap computers for the third world, right?
Right.
And they seem to think that the $100 price point is kind of the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that's probably is a sweet spot, but, you know, number one, it's going to be the government of those countries that's going to have to buy these, because even at $100 for a small little computer,
mm-hmm.
there's no way that half of the people that live in those, they're destitute. $100 is an ungodly sum of money for them. They can't afford a computer. That's like the last thing. How about running water? Mm-hmm. You know, we got to get these people access to the internet. How about access to clean water? How about that?
Yeah.
How about some vaccines? How about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big news this week was Warren Buffett pledging half of whatever his to fortune. Bill Gates.
Yeah. $30 million.
Makes the
$3
billion Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the greatest things I've ever heard of.
That is
great. If the money's going to be... Because just throwing money at a problem doesn't solve the problem. You have to solve the underlying problems.
Well, and I'm sure one of the things that went into Buffett's decision to do that was the fact that Bill said he was stepping away from Microsoft in a year. In 2 years, and he was going to manage his own money and his own
where the money how it's going to be spent and you got to give up to Bill Gates. He's a very very smart man.
Yeah.
And I think him in charge of $30 billion trying to fight poverty and disease and that I think that's a pretty good chance that he can make a dent in the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said though, it's not just throwing money at the problem is going to solve it. It's really not.
Right, because there's a lot of institutional and governmental things that go behind that. Not our governments, but also governments of third world countries.
Absolutely, that are completely corrupt.
And so maybe Warren and Bill are just going to buy a bunch of third world countries and straighten them out and just, you know.
Yeah, bring Michael Jordan and Oprah Winfrey in it. They're rich. And let's see, who else? Who else could they get?
They could call it Billy Buffett Land or something.
Billy Buffett Land. And now we need more rich people, though. You know, I keep seeing these Oprah Winfrey advertisements on television, and I keep thinking, well, that's great that you're doing this story, but you have more money than God, Oprah. How about doing something with it? You know,
which actually she does, but I don't think she's very public with what she does with her money as far as her charitable giving, because she knows that people will take it the wrong way and be like, oh, it's just Oprah being, you know, the queen again. But I don't know. I don't have that kind of
money. Then I see the Legends Ball, and I'm like, okay, you know, Oprah really only cares about stardom. That's really her thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bill Gates, if he could take his level of technical know-how and apply it.
His business acumen?
I don't think business is necessarily what's going... I think it's the technology as it's developing that he can apply it to these countries to get clean water. To get a better distribution channel for vaccines. Mm-hmm. So it's getting to the people. It's not getting to the mobsters at these places that are selling it on the black market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's convincing big drug companies to give them AIDS vaccines, well, AIDS drugs, at cost.
Right.
You know, that's where I think he's going to have a lot of success. Because let's be honest, that foundation is worth more than what? Almost every country in the entire planet. Really?
Than a lot of countries in the planet.
There's probably maybe 12 countries have more money gross than that.
Oh, I think there's more than
$30 billion. Dollars.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, you really start looking at it. Yeah, you think of all the big ones do, but that's a lot of money.
That's still a lot of money, yeah.
And if anybody can help... And it's not just Africa, it's anywhere that's impoverished, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is.
Africa really needs some help. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're it's such bad shape there. And let's hope that money goes to something. But going back to my point, you know, they're trying to build these $100 computers to sell to these countries.
Mm-hmm.
We have all this excess, and not just America, but in a lot of countries.
Mm-hmm.
You get all this extra RAM. Couldn't something be done with that? I mean, 256 megs may not be a lot to you, and it may be sitting on your shelf practically
What you
useless.
Need is a couple of creative modders who can slam together a computer out of used or...
Yes.
Or, what am I looking for? Obsolete components.
Yes.
And, that, and
that
come up
still
with...
still do something with
right.
it.
Right.
I'm not saying use
and
a Mac
very basic,
PC.
Yeah. Run a very basic Word Linux. Program, very basic spreadsheet program, and some sort of internet program.
Yeah, and then, you know, you just get some kind of a distribution channel that you could funnel all these used parts to.
Yep.
Send your old RAM here. Send your old hard drive here.
Oh, you know it. It'll be all over
I can't tell you how many times I go to a client's house, and they got an old 6-gig hard drive, and what are you doing with that? Well, nothing. It's, you know, I upgraded, and I didn't have another slot for it, so it's just sitting there. 6 gigabytes is not a little bit of space. You put something like that in with the 256 megs of RAM into a small little computer, that's running a Linux.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck? You could do that.
Yeah.
And I think rather than going out there and trying to reinvent the wheel,
mm-hmm.
or the crank, you know, the little crank thing, I think that's a good idea for power, but, you know, why don't we start with the excesses that we already have, recondition them,
mm-hmm.
like you said, let's do something with that.
Instead of dumping them in a landfill in India?
That's right.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
I think that would probably be more beneficial.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's the sermon this week.
All this came out of Chad's shower this morning, so.
That's right. Well, let's talk about a little bit of Apple news and Macintosh news. And
by the way, Tim was not with me when this discussion occurred, so.
No. I can honestly say
I just had the idea. So.
Apple releases QuickTime 7.1.2 on June 28th.
Apple today released QuickTime 7.1.2 update via its software update utility and the web. The company says this update and issue will settle an issue with previewing iDVD projects. This update is recommended for all QuickTime 7 users.
I did download it. I haven't tested it yet.
I have not downloaded it
well,
yet.
Well, I knew that there was a couple updates from a week or so, or 2 weeks, that I hadn't updated any of my Macs yet. I hadn't read about any bad things happening with. So I went ahead today and said, yeah, go ahead and update everything. Mm-hmm. And I saw QuickTime jump in at the last minute. And I went, nope! I didn't want to update that one until I knew for a fact it was okay.
Yeah.
Apple releases MacBook Pro 17-inch SMC FireWire update.
Firmware
update. I said, yeah, I don't know.
Yep.
Firmware update. Apple has released a firmware update for its 17-inch MacBook Pro. Apple notes this SMC firmware update adjusts a fan behavior in the MacBook Pro 17-inch. Complete instructions for installing this firmware update is available from Apple's website. I know that there was a lot of people complaining because those are quite noisy machines.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it was possibly the fan running uncontrollably. I had that problem with my older G5.
Yeah?
Yeah, for no reason at all. Sometimes the fan would just kick right on and sound like a vacuum cleaner in the other room or a small moped. My wife would, what the heck is it doing? I don't know. It's not crash or anything. It's just decided to rev its engine a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would drive me crazy.
Apple releases Mac OS 10.4.7 update. Today, Apple released Mac OS 10.4.7 update via its software update utility and the web, the company says. This update is recommended for all users and includes general operating system fixes as well as a specific fix for the following applications and technologies.
It includes fixes for preventing AFP deadlocks and drop connections, saving Adobe and Quark documents to AFP mounted volumes, Bluetooth file transfers, pairing and connecting to a Bluetooth mouse, and syncing to a mobile phone, which I'm looking forward to testing myself, audio playback in QuickTime, iTunes, Final Cut Pro, and soundtrack applications, and ensuring icons are spaced correctly when viewed on the desktop.
Other changes include determining the space required to burn folders, iChat audio and video connectivity, creating chat rooms when using AIM, importing files into Keynote 3, PDF workflows when using iCal and iPhoto, reliable use of Automator actions within workflows, importing and removing fonts and font books, syncing addresses, bookmarks, calendar events, and files to .Mac, compatibility with third-party applications and devices, and previous standalone security updates.
So it sounds like 10.4.7 is a lot of fixes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them pretty important. I knew the AFP, if you had an AFP-mounted server, shared server on your desktop, it would drop out honestly often under Mac OS 10.4 under Tiger, and I'm glad that they finally got that corrected, because there's a lot of workflows that are based around AFP shared servers, and if you're trying to save a document to a shared server and it just disappears for no reason, kind of part of a problem.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious about the iChat audio and video connectivity, because we haven't had a lot of good luck on this podcast recording interviews in iChat audio.
We can do it. It's just not as good a quality as Skype.
And it gets a little more choppier, to be honest. So maybe this will... I know you haven't updated this computer yet, but...
No.
Maybe this will... It's worth a try.
Yep. And finally, Apple... Well, not finally.
Got one more
after this. Apple details eMac Repair Extension Program.
Apple recently posted a page to its website with details on its eMac repair extension program, notes Mac Central. The eMac repair extension program for video and power issues applies to eMac computers that exhibit a certain video or power-related issue as a result of a specific component failure. These computers were sold between approximately April 2004 and June 2005. If your eMac is exhibiting any of the symptoms listed below and your computer's serial number is within the noted ranges, your computer may be eligible for repair free of charge.
And you can go to Apple's website and get the complete details.
Yep.
That's cool. They admit that there's a problem, and let's get it taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Apple is going to preview macOS X Leopard, macOS 10 Leopard, which will be, what, 10.5, at WWDC 2006 keynote.
Woo-woo.
And this is posted on June 26th at MacMinute.com. Apple today announced that CEO Steve Jobs will headline a team of Apple executives, including Philip Schiller. I'm used to just Phil, not Philip.
No.
Phil Schiller, Senior Vice President of Apple Worldwide Product Marketing, and a whole bunch of other people. And they're going to give a preview of Leopard on Monday, August 7th, beginning at 10 a.m. at San Francisco's Moscone West, which is where Macworld Expo takes place.
Yep.
And blah, 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 and you can come see how it looks, and performance of Intel-based Macs, and, you know, all that fun stuff. And
are we expecting a really huge...
Yes, I think
really?
I think 10.5 is going to be huge. It's the fifth major release of OS X, and I think it's going to be big, because now that the Intel Macs have rolled out, I think they're going to roll out, and we've said this before, I think they're going to roll out the Power Mac replacement,
yeah,
which we figure is going to be called the Mac Pro.
Now, do you think they're going to have some sort of a seamless Windows emulator or Parallels? Or are they going to stick with
I don't know. I don't think that Apple's really too concerned at this moment on promoting Windows compatibility at WWDC. Because this is for the developers. They want developers to develop for the Macintosh.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing what 10.5 is going to offer, because hey, let's be honest, last year I said I went out and bought 10.4 Tiger,
right?
And I said I was going to wait for at least a week to make sure everything's kosher, and like an idiot, I couldn't. I went and installed it the same day. I can't wait, and so I did it. And let's be honest, I'll do it again with 10.5.
Yeah,
I'll just go ahead and update it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, well, we'll get into Intel Macs. I want to talk about those in a little bit here. But first, let's hear from our sponsors, and let's hear some other cool content.
Email, this is Apple Airport Express. You're cleared for wireless takeoff from the living room. Internet, this is Apple Airport Express. You're cleared for landing in the kitchen. iTunes, this is Apple Airport Express. You're coming in nice and easy on our wireless runway.
Apple Airport Express from Small Dog Electronics. Wireless networking anywhere you are. Browse, email, print, even listen to music. Wireless. Go wireless now with a 12-inch iBook, Airport Express, and carry case for $11.49. Small Dog Electronics in Waitsfield and on the web at smalldog.com. Small Dog is wireless.
This week, we go to our Book Bites bookshelf. On Nemo's MyMac.com podcast, reviews you can use that won't make you snooze. And I'd like to call your attention to two books you probably have not seen that, if you're interested in creativity and productivity, will definitely change your life and your working methods. The first book is called Adobe Photoshop CS2 Visual Encyclopedia, Your Visual A to Z Reference. The author is Steve Romanello. He's from Tucson, Arizona, even though I don't know the guy. We're from the same town. And the publisher is from Wiley. We will have in our show notes the ISBN and the particulars of both of these books. The Photoshop CS2 Visual Encyclopedia is a color-coded and very colorful page after page of what everything actually looks like in Photoshop. Alphabetical, so under F for filter, filter, noise, reduce noise, remove noise from your digital photographs, L, layers, fill layers, apply a gradient and pattern, let's see, elliptical marquees, keyboard shortcuts, anything that you can do in Photoshop has an actual picture and a visual way to see how it's done. So many Photoshop books describe what you can do, but they don't actually provide colorful pages to allow you to see what those things are supposed to look like along the lessons. Once you get good at Photoshop, and if you're using Photoshop with other applications, you want to pick up a book by O'Reilly Media called Adobe Creative Suite 2 Workflow, Integrating the Tools, Increasing Your Productivity by Jennifer Alsbach, Sherry Nakano, and Steve Sampson. This book is really exceptional. It's small, it's compact, but it's also dense, and it tells you, once you're doing something in Photoshop, how do you get that to coordinate with Illustrator or Go Live or Acrobat? How do you get the different components of the Creative Suite to talk to one another and to work for any particular image or creative file or document that needs to be shared or migrated from one to the other? So, for the Photoshop CS2 Visual Encyclopedia, I give this a strong 4 out of 5 for our Book Bites review. For the Adobe Creative Suite 2 Workflow, I give it a 4.5 out of 5. My only criticism is the type is a little bit small for older eyes such as mine, and sometimes the illustration and screenshot that it's showing on a page isn't exactly what's going on that particular page because the pages are so physically small. I'm nitpicking now because the content is terrific on both of these books. Again, we'll have the ISBN and the exact details of every book on the show notes, but please look at Adobe Creative Suite 2 Workflow from O'Reilly Media and Adobe Photoshop CS2 Visual Encyclopedia from Wiley Publishers. Thank you for listening to the MyMac.com podcast. John Nemo signing off with another review you can use that hopefully did not make you snooze.
Yeah, thanks, John. I use Adobe CS2 all the time, so I'm two books that I might be interested in taking a look at because, you know, yeah, I'm an expert with those type of programs, but, you know, everybody could learn more and be more productive with almost any program.
Mm-hmm.
And Photoshop really is almost an operating system unto itself.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not the kind of program that you're going to jump in and start using right away. You can, but you're not going to get the most out of it, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I was mentioning earlier that I want to talk a little bit about the Intel Macs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of waiting before I decide whether I want to upgrade any of my current machines to see what the new professional Mac Pro is going to be. My main machine at home is my G5.
Right.
2.5 gigahertz G5, 4 gigs of RAM,
mm-hmm.
about a terabyte of storage on it at this point. And I use it a lot, but at this point I'm using my laptop almost as much as I am my desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I keep looking at the MacBook Pro. I do a lot of editing and HTML work and some Photoshop work on my laptop now because it's just convenient for me.
Mm-hmm.
And how much faster it will be on a MacBook Pro compared to my MacBook or my PowerBook. The PowerBook I got is a 1 gigahertz G4.
Mm-hmm.
If I bought a new MacBook, it would be a dual core 2 gigahertz machine.
Yeah.
That's significantly faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I would betcha that Photoshop CS2 would run faster on that, even under Rosetta, than it's running on my G4 100 or 1 gigahertz machine now.
Mm.
I bet you it would be faster.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out. I mean, if anybody out there has experimented or has a MacBook Pro
and came from a machine close to 1 gigahertz G4, what is the speed comparison? Is it better? Is it definitely worth getting in MacBook Pro? You know, the other thing that I keep, as you know, I keep my MacBook in my kitchen, mm-hmm. or my MacBook. See, I'm already starting to get used to calling them
My
PowerBook in the kitchen, and I usually keep it on a chair, and my cord dangles into where people walk, unfortunately, because I'm lazy and I just don't turn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I trip over that cord all the time. I can't tell you how many times I've jerked the cord right out of that PowerBook, mm-hmm. or almost pulled a PowerBook onto the floor.
Yeah,
that really is a concern of mine. And I've got 3 kids, so, you know, that's something that's always kind of at the forefront of my thoughts. Mm-hmm. With the MacBook Pro,
you get that MagLock.
That really is attractive to me. That really is. I love the concept. I still haven't seen one in action. I've seen the MacBooks, but I never really paid much attention to the power cord because, let's be honest, who does?
Yeah.
But that is something that's really intriguing to me. Here's the other end of the argument. If I got a MacBook Pro, it's going to cost about $2,000. Mm-hmm. I just need a 15-inch. I don't need the 17.
Yeah.
So $2,000, or $1,000 or so for a regular MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only got that 13.3-inch screen.
Right.
Now, for like you, that would be fine.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd still love it.
But for me, a 13-inch screen is pretty small for all the work that I do on it.
Yeah.
So I almost do need the MacBook because of the 15-inch screen. Plus, I'm used to the PowerBook 15-inch right now.
Mm-hmm.
Going to a 13-inch, I think, would just kill me. Like, oh, this is too small. So, I don't... I'm torn. What are your thoughts? Do you think I ought to wait? Do you think I ought to make the plunge? And if I did make the plunge, what do I do with the MacBook or the PowerBook G4 that I got here?
Mm.
That's all tricked out. And
yeah.
I mean, the thing about this PowerBook G4, and I was telling Chad when I first got here, I said, you know, this has probably been the most dependable Mac I've ever had.
Yeah.
I have yet to have a problem with this PowerBook, and I've had it for over a year at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Never had a problem, and I use it all the time.
Right.
I love typing on it, and I know the MacBook's going to be the same when it comes to typing and stuff. It's basically the same computer
mm-hmm.
on the outside. I like typing on it. It's almost fast enough for what I'm doing. I mean, mm-hmm. there's days that I'm doing some graphic work on it, and I think, you know what, I need to stop doing it and just go jump on the G5 because I'll be done with this in a heartbeat.
Right.
But I'm torn. Should I go with a MacBook Pro? Should I just hold on to the G4 a little longer? I mean, it's in almost perfect shape.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks great. It's got one little ding on it. Did you ever notice the ding?
No, I never saw the ding.
On the front... Is it the front? Yeah, on the front, if it's closed looking at you,
mm-hmm.
the front left, it's got this little bitty ding.
No,
see it?
I see that, yeah.
I don't remember how it happened, and if you hold it like this, you can see that it is a little ding.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only thing wrong with it.
Hmm.
Other than, I mean, it looks like it's brand new still.
Yeah, I always thought it was sharp looking.
Yeah, well, I love it. I love this machine, but it's like, I really do need some more power.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody out there is listening that has made the jump to a MacBook Pro from a Mac or a PowerBook,
mm-hmm.
let me know what you think. Send your email to tim@mymac.com, and if we get enough of them, I'll read your comments next week, because I really am curious.
It's, yeah.
I'm faced with a dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
We need to replace your iBook. Chad's got a, what is it, 800 megahertz?
900 megahertz G3.
That's pretty slow. He doesn't have an AirPort card in it. Even though no. he does have a wireless Netgear router.
I did order one.
You did order one?
Ordered that and ordered some RAM. We actually found one online cheap. My wife had been shopping for quite a while because she knows that when I do decide to get a MacBook, which I probably will get one.
The iBook's going to be hers.
Oh, yeah.
So she'll have that. You'll have... So you both will be wireless. Could be pretty much anywhere in the house that you mm-hmm. want. You know what would probably benefit you? Well, you're running Netgear.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how the AirPort Express. I don't know if you need an AirPort base station to work with the AirPort Express, mm-hmm. or the AirPort Express will work with your current wireless router.
Yeah.
But that would actually extend your range,
mm-hmm.
which could be a lot of right. benefit to you.
Which the MacBook would probably have, or it would have an AirPort Express card, but this you can only get an AirPort card for. So
no, I'm talking about the base station. Yeah, the little tiny base station that you can hook up to your stereo and send yeah. your music to.
Mm-hmm.
That also extends your range of your AirPort your wireless connection. And I've mm-hmm. got one of those, which unfortunately isn't doing anything at my house.
Hmm.
So maybe I'll just give you that, and we can test it and see if it will work with your Netgear and extend the range of your wireless connection in your house.
Oh, that'd be
or
worth
at the very least, if you're in the basement with mm-hmm. your iBook once it's wireless.
Which is probably where we would be with it.
Right. I can, if you're only getting like one bar
mm-hmm.
in your
network,
maybe an AirPort Express card plugged into maybe the kitchen halfway point would boost you up to two or three bars.
That'd be worth experimenting with, yeah.
Well, you know, I've got the PowerBook that's wireless, so maybe we'll have to do that this weekend or something.
Yeah.
We're all making plans while we're recording the podcast, and people are listening going, I don't care about this. What's going on? Talk. Do something.
All right.
Your news.
Let's talk about Innotek then.
Yeah, we will definitely talk about Innotek. We got a really good email. I want to say who it was, but it's on my G5, and I didn't bring that with me. That's basically saying, you know, you guys have been advertising for Innotek for a while now,
mm-hmm.
but it's probably not the best advertising. And he's right, because we kind of talked about you know, it's not the fastest, or it's not the, you're not going to get the cheapest hosting, and you're not going to get this. And
they're not the biggest. And
yeah, but you're going to get great customer service.
Right.
And he's right. That's probably not the best way to advertise.
Mm-hmm.
And his suggestion was, you guys are posting these podcasts. They're being downloaded all the time. Mm-hmm. Talk about that. And he's right. We own our server.
Right.
It is a PowerMac G5 1.8 gigahertz. That's what MyMac.com is hosted on.
And we just installed that, what, this year?
This couple months ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not sitting at my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is sitting at Inotech's business.
Server farm.
Server farm in California. They maintain it. It's hooked up to their network.
Mm-hmm.
And we have never had a problem.
No.
And it's not... because the Macintosh is inherently a better server machine than anything else, because quite honestly, I don't think it is. But the care that they treat my Mac there, that if there's any problems, they let me know right away.
Mm-hmm.
That they take care of the problem.
Right.
This is my server. This isn't their server.
Mm-hmm.
But they treat it like it's theirs. And when you download something from our website, it's fast.
Mm-hmm.
It cranks right along. Even on the days that we release the podcast, Thursday mornings, that's when everybody's downloading the podcast,
right.
It seems. Our machine doesn't miss a beat.
Yep.
And it's because it's at Inotech.com. I think that has a whole lot to do with it.
Well, and even previous to that, before we provided them with a server for the website, they still...
And we were on a shared server,
yeah.
and we still didn't have a problem.
No.
And so, you know, if you're just looking to put up a website... and you want reliability, you want reliable speeds, you want someone to be able to help you. Here's the thing. You go to a place like GoDaddy. I'm sure they're a fine company. But if you have a problem with GoDaddy, good luck getting an actual human being to take care of your problem right now.
Yeah.
With Inotech.com, I don't have that problem.
Yep.
I just call them up or send them an email. Anytime I've ever sent an email, I guarantee you it's never been more than a half hour before an actual human being responded.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem's taken care of.
Yep.
They just know what they're doing, and they, boom, they take care of it. So that's our ad this week for Inotech.com.
Yeah.
Inotech.com. Just go to our show notes or anywhere at mymac.com. You'll find the link to Inotech.
Yep.
And it's been over 8 years now that we've been with them, and I couldn't be happier.
Oh, yeah. Great service. Thanks again, Inotech.
Let's listen to, what do we got here?
We've got a speedy review from Bob Hasler.
We do have a speedy review. Let's check out Robert's speedy review.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another speedy review from Robert at MyMac.com. Let's face it, you just spent a lot of money on your iPod and you want to protect it. There are a ton of cases out there, but one of the best quality iPod cases you can get for your Nano or your video is by iSkin. I just picked up the Evo 3 for my video iPod, and I love it. It's made from an extremely durable neoprene rubber. Evo 3 also has a clear plastic face that slips in and out of the neoprene outer casing. One of my favorite features is it has little rubber flaps which protect all the ports and the buttons, which is something lacking on many of the cheaper cases that you can find out there. But probably the best feature I like about the iSkin is that you don't have to take it off to put it in your dock. Most of the other neoprene cases out there, you actually have to remove them before you dock it. The last thing I like about this case is the neoprene rubber really makes it hard to slip out of your hands. I like the rubber form factor over some of the other hard shell cases just because of that. The Evo 3 iSkin retails for about $35. I picked mine up at the Apple Store, and it came with a coupon for a month trial membership at audible.com, along with two free downloads. Even though the iSkin costs a little bit more than some of the other neoprene cases that are out there, I do highly recommend it. It is a quality piece. Thanks for listening. This has been Robert from MyMac.com with another speedy review. Take it away, Tim.
And we are here with Neil Ticton. Neil Ticton is the editor-in-chief of Mac Tech Magazine. How are you doing, Neil?
Oh, pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing real well. So you're also the publisher, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, I'm the publisher and the editor-in-chief. Do that dual hat thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that hat, is it like a Sherlock Holmes hat where it's on both sides, or is it one in the front, one in the back?
It's one in the front, one in the back, usually.
So, let's talk about your history in the Macintosh. Let's start there. What was your first Mac?
Mac Plus.
A Mac Plus. What'd you use it for?
I was actually doing some programming and using it for one of my degrees and stuff like that at the time. Word processing in Excel and, or not Excel, but word processing and reports and that kind of stuff, but I was also writing some code.
Hmm. Now, it says here you've been publishing since 1984. That's a long time for a Mac publication.
It's the second oldest Mac publication out there. I've been publisher since 1992, but the magazine was started in November of 1984.
How did you come into working at Mac Tech Magazine?
They actually had, I had done some writing for the magazine over time, and I think we were even one of their advertisers at one point. And I had gotten contacted by them when they were looking for a change in ownership, and we ultimately took it over. And at that point, it was called Mac Tutor. And about within a year of taking it over, we changed the name to Mac Tech, which was a much better representation of what it did. And ultimately, about a year and a half ago, we greatly expanded the editorial focus to be for all geeks on the Mac, not just for programmers, which is how the magazine got its start. And since then, we've just been growing like crazy.
Now, right now, for at least for programmers and Mac geeks, this is an exciting time to be a Mac user, what with the Intel Macs. How is that affecting the publication?
Well, there's a number of reasons that the magazine is growing, and interest in Intel Macs is certainly one of those. But overall, the publication, we've been seeing very significant growth on the website because of our news aggregation and our way for people to check in easily for the whole community at a glance on our homepage. But also, we brought online something called MacForge, which is an open source index for all kinds of great Mac products that projects that work on the Mac or are likely to work on the Mac, and it makes it easy for people to see stuff. So we've got some more things coming down the line here with the Mac Tech website, but they're not quite ready yet. But our web traffic has about tripled since last year.
Wow.
And our readership right now is on its way to doubling. We've got some cool stuff that we're doing with Microsoft and Intel there. And on the advertising side, I mean, surprisingly enough, the readers of the magazine really, really like the advertisements in MacTech, and they've asked us in our last reader survey to actually get more ads because they want to see who's a player in the Mac market, and they want to learn about products. And so they treat the advertising in MacTech very much like editorial in a lot of ways. So our advertising is substantially higher than where it was last year. It's more than triple. So we've got a lot of things that are going on. Men's B2B just named us listed us as the fastest growing technical publication on any platform by far. Men's B2B is a publication for publishers, if you will. And so there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of reasons, and the Intel Macs are a piece of that, but they're by no means all of it.
You know, when you think that, we talked about a couple weeks ago how subscription is going down majorly in most publications, and yet here you are saying here at MacTech, it's going up. Everything's going better.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that for magazines overall, not just in the Mac market, but overall, subscriptions are not going down. There's all kinds of really good stuff out there. There are new magazines launched all the time. But in every case, you have to look at each individual situation. And some of the major Mac magazines that are out there, which are great pubs, they're shifting people from print to the web because that's more about what they're doing. I mean, a lot of times, if you're a reader of publication, you're looking for, you know, product reviews and news and that kind of stuff. And that's actually, in a lot of ways, better serviced on the web than it is in print. In print, you want to learn about, you know, how to do things. You want to be enlightened or entertained or educated in some way. And people prefer print for that as opposed to going to the web. Well, Mac Tech does news on the web. It's the only place we do news. We don't do it in print at all. And what we leave in the print pages are, let's teach you how to go about doing something specific, and so that you can learn about it. We do some reviews in the magazine too, but they generally have some learning built into them. And we focus on that way. So it really just comes down to what people want on the web, we're putting on the web, and what people want in print, we're putting in print. And I think that that's the mixture that makes sense for us.
Now, you also, I know with the Mac Forge, you bring in a lot of independent developers. Are you seeing more people contributing independent software than previously? I mean, over 92, or so over what, 13 years now, 14 years since 14. You've been editor.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that the core Mac developer market, the guys that are producing the shrink wrap and the major apps and stuff like that, that's, you know, about the same. Has been for years. These are the people that, you know, have gone through the PowerPC transition and the OS X transition and, you know, and all, and now the Intel transition. They're used to what the Mac market's like and going from there. What we see out there is kind of a proliferation of the products that are, you know, people are doing in their spare time, whether they're scripting applications. I mean, you can do fabulous things with AppleScript Studio. You know, people don't necessarily realize it, but applications like Carbon Copy Cloner are actually an AppleScript Studio application doing stuff, you know, scripting the shell. Or one of the editors for the magazine, one of the contributing editors named Deem Shavit, wrote a great set of utilities for NetAdmins and whatnot called Mac Helpmate, which is also an AppleScript Studio application, and he's doing a bunch of stuff under the hood. So you can do some pretty cool stuff that traditionally wasn't necessary to, you know, that traditionally would have had to go and write some real serious code for. And those are the kinds of things that we're seeing, I think, a lot more of. And of course, on the web, you've got all kinds of different development that can happen there, whether it's Ajax or Ruby on Rails or PHP, MySQL, you know, whatever the case may be, there's all kinds of interesting web stuff out there. So if you're looking at the core, you know, C++, Objective-C, Cocoa, Carbon developer, you know, I think that part of the market's pretty stable, pretty consistent. But if you look at the other kinds of things that are some of the interesting technologies that are more modern and not meant for, you know, a major application mm-hmm. necessarily, I think that there's a good chunk more of that.
Do you see any exodus of window programmers coming to the Mac? Do you think that's happening?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, we had we're doing this this program with Microsoft, and your folks, your readers and listeners can go check this out. Microsoft is giving away free subscriptions to Mac Tech for those that qualify, and you just need to be an IT pro and consultant. You have to pay for the postage and handling, but the magazine itself is free, and it's a great way for people to check this out. Well, one of the things that we've done with that, if they go to the Mac Tech homepage, they'll see a link for that. One of the things we've done with that is we've taken those programs to some of the Windows-only markets, and we've done very well in working with folks like, you know, eWeek and Windows IT Pro Magazine and Programmer's Paradise and even stuff with SourceForge and Flashdot, which are traditionally very Windows-oriented markets across the board, the first being even more so. And people really like it. So we're seeing a lot of interest in the Mac, probably because of the Intel stuff, probably because of boot camp and it becoming interesting in that regard. But it's we're seeing a lot of stuff going on.
What does boot camp and Parallels do for you as a publisher of Mac Tech? Does it change anything in your coverage, or is everything pretty much staying the same?
Well, we're certainly getting asked a lot of questions about boot camp and Parallels, not so much from our readership, but by people out there who are looking for opinions. And there's a variety, you know, and also what's going to go on here with Microsoft on virtual PC. And we ran a piece in our May issue that was all about, you know, Windows running on the Mac. We gave people a variety of choices, not only Parallels and VPC if you're doing the PowerPC stuff, but also some of these other solutions out there that are open source that are available. And it, like I said, it was in our May issue. And what we're hearing from people is that it just is opening up opportunities for them where they before had no choice on getting a Mac. Now they have an option. And, you know, it's kind of cool when you see some of these benchmarks that are out there where Macs running Windows and in on some of the benchmarks are actually faster than PCs running Windows, even with the same processor. So how much effect are we having on it? Well, you know, not a terrible amount. It's another topic for us to cover, and we're taking care of that. But that's, you know, that's what we're seeing.
Cool. You know, it's one of the things I get a lot of questions of from our readers. How can I run Windows at the same time as my Macintosh? And, of course, I point them to Parallels.
Right.
But what I'm hearing more and more is from window users who bought a MacBook Pro because
right.
it gives them that comfy blanket. Hey, I can still run my Windows stuff. I'm hearing right. from a lot of those people, what can I use on the Mac to do this instead of using the Windows program? So,
yeah, and I think we've always kind of fielded those questions from when anybody on Windows is considering doing a Mac. So I haven't really perceived that as a change, but you're right. I mean, we're hearing, you know, similar kinds of questions out there at the application level. What about this or that or whatever? So and how do we go about accomplishing it? One of the big things that people don't realize is that they are, you know, that many times we're looking at a lot of these applications were first invented on the Mac and later brought to Windows. For example, Word and Excel were both first created on the Mac and later brought to Windows.
Mm-hmm. AOL.
Yeah, we try not to go there.
Here's a question for you. What's bigger for Mac Tech Magazine? Macworld Expo or Worldwide Developers Conference?
Well, Worldwide Developers Conference is really focused on... Is really focused on a Steve Jobs keynote and what Apple wants to convey out there as their message. Whereas Macworld Expo is a third party focus more than anything. I mean, yes, Apple's there, but you know, I think the people who are really entrenched in the market at a Macworld Expo don't necessarily even walk into the Apple booth. I mean, they might to check out a machine in what's going on. So Macworld is a pretty important community event, and what's happening, you know, nowadays as there's become less and less events in the Mac marketplace is that all of those events have taken on a greater role.
Do you think Apple should spin off the iPod division?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that they necessarily will, and I think that people getting introduced to the iPod is not necessarily a bad thing, for the Mac market. I mean, we've seen a lot of people get a good feeling for what iTunes is like and the iPod is like, and making the assumption that it carries over onto the Mac, and they're considering Macs as a result. So I think, you know, as long as it's important to maintain that, and I wouldn't want to see splitting it off into a different company if we wouldn't be able to continue to maintain that. And I think that you're going to see additional synergies beyond that, with music and video and audio and whatnot that in between the Mac and the iPod that may make it more difficult to split them off, and that they will want to retain them within the same company. So I'd probably lean towards keeping them together.
Well, I'm going to ask you to give me a little speculation since we've mentioned Worldwide Developers Conference, and we know Apple's going to do a preview of Leopard. What do you think we're going to see?
Well, I think we're going to, you know, Apple was very, very careful to talk about Bootcamp being beta software. And, you know, that not to necessarily, you know, rely, you know, put a business relying on it in some way, that it was all about a kind of a proof of concept. And half of me wonders, maybe somebody's checked, whether there is a, whether it's going to stop working, come, you know, time for this to ship Leopard, at some point. And that may be something that we see happen over time. Part of it, I think we're gonna see what happens here with we're gonna see what happens with the whole boot camp scenario within Leopard, and whether you're gonna be able to see it compete with something like VPC and Parallels, or what. It's hard to say. But half of me, yeah, I think it's going to depend on what Apple's relationship with is like with Microsoft, and whether, you know, they want to let VPC, assuming that there is a VPC coming at some point for Intel, whether they want that to happen, or if they're going to come up with their other solution, or are you going to be able to double click on an EXE file in the middle of the Finder and have it work? There's many different speculations there as to what's happening. I think by the time we get to Worldwide Developer Conference, we'll probably see the rest of the Intel rollout either in an announcement or actual shipping products. And there's going to be one surprise announcement that none of us know is coming.
Hopefully it's the replacement to the Power Mac. That's kind of what I'm waiting for myself. A lot of people like to say, well, they can't do that until Adobe updates their programs, but I don't see why Apple couldn't sell a G5 as well as a Mac Pro at the same time. I don't think that would hurt them any, and there's a lot of people, I still think, waiting to buy an Intel Mac when the desktop machines are replaced.
Well, I'm sure that that's the case. By the same token, you know, a lot of the creative market who deals with the pro machines at the desktop level are going to be waiting for Photoshop and whatever else to come out. So I don't think that those are really going to get the full impact of what they're going to do until after those are available. You know, it's just a matter of everybody's individual pieces and stuff. Personally, you know, I've been waiting to upgrade my desktop machine to something that uses less power but is faster. And you know, I mean, the Intel iMacs that are out there are fabulous machines. They're perfect. I mean, they're just great machines. And it'll be nice to see a pro version of something like that come available.
Other than some type of Windows compatibility or at least Windows software compatibility in Leopard, what do you think the big deal with Leopard's going to be? What's going to make people, Mac users, run out and buy a copy of 10.5 the day it comes out?
You know, I've been in this market for a long, long time, and I don't tend to speculate very often, in part because no matter how much speculation we do, there's going to be a surprise from them, that from Apple, that we don't know about. And we've got our hands full with the magazine in describing, you know, all the great things that Tiger and even Panther can do, for that matter. And when Apple decides that they're going to stabilize what Leopard's going to do and whatnot, then we'll have a bunch of coverage on that. We've got some things in the works so that we hit the ground running on what that is. But I'm not looking to speculate on that kind of stuff right now.
Now, you said you started in 92 with MacTech. I actually started MyMac.com in 95, so we've both been in this for quite a while.
Yeah, I've actually been in the Mac industry since, 84, 85. In the old days, they called it an Apple certified developer. And, yeah. I shipped programming tools on the Mac in the 80s. I worked for Apple in the late 80s. I used to sell, mail order kinds of stuff at one point in the 80s and in the 90s. You know, I mean, there's a bunch of different stuff that I've done over the period of time. So I've been in the industry for 22 years at this point, ever since the Mac came, the first year of the Mac. I've been around for a while on this stuff.
Yeah, if you could go back, say 10 years ago or even 15 years ago, could you possibly have imagined where Apple is right now?
Well, certainly none of us saw the iPod coming. The rest of it, the rest of it is good stuff, but it wasn't stuff that I'm truly surprised by. I mean, we know that Apple does a better job, on a lot of this, on the OS stuff and making it more stable and, you know, whether it's viruses or bugs or whatever the case may be. And that's not, it's a little different, but it's not terribly different now from when Windows 95 came out. And so we're just seeing evolutions of those things. I don't think any of us saw the iPod coming. Some people may not have seen the internet coming. I certainly was doing internet stuff, then. We've had MacTech.com online since 94. We're a really old website by that. I mean, we have 50,000 pages of content. It had to have come from somewhere. So,
yeah.
there's all kinds of really neat stuff that has evolved over time. And Apple's done a really good job of that. So, could I have envisioned what Mac OS X would look like? Could I envision that we would be using Unix? No. But did I think that things would get more and more stable and more evolved over time? Yes.
you missed that there was never such a thing called Mac OS 8, not the true Mac OS 8.
Well, I mean, a lot of that stuff that happened in that era was about politics and maneuvering and what needed to be done and whatnot. And, Steve Jobs has a vision and he executes that vision, and that's where we go.
If anybody wants to subscribe to Mac Tech Magazine, where would they go and how would they do it?
If they're going to do it here relatively soon, I would try to take advantage of Microsoft's generosity and get the free subscription. It's, because all you have to do is pay the $10 in postage for it to get the magazine, and you can just do that. There's a link right on the right side of every page of MacTech.com right now, and on the homepage there's a full-size graphic that talks about it a little bit, and you fill out a short survey, which. Well, if it takes you more than a moment, I'd be surprised. And if you qualify, it asks you for your credit card. You pay the $9.95 for the postage, and then you're done. And so I would go to www.mactech.com. MacTech is MacTech.
I wanted to publicly thank you. Less than a year ago, I ran a web on the web, the Mac Users Helping Katrina, and you, Mac Tech Magazine, and you contributed to that, and we helped us raise a little bit of money. And I wanted to publicly thank you for that, Neil. I appreciate that.
Our pleasure. And we were glad to see it. We were actually going through a period where we had worked with the Red Cross a little bit about how to get out a message to all webmasters on how to get stuff up on their sites and get money contributed in some meaningful and helpful way. So you guys were right at the forefront of that, and that was great to see. So.
Well, hopefully we'll have a pretty safe time here in the future. We won't have to do anything like quite that drastic again. But.
Yeah, hopefully not. You did ask one other question. I just remembered something about the Intel stuff that you were asking a moment ago and how it impacted Mac Tech. And there are two things on the homepage of Mac Tech that you can see. One is we did a bunch of research from Microsoft on how well Office would run on the Intel Macs. Do they run well under Rosetta, or do you need to wait in order to buy in order for the Universal to come out in order to buy the machine? And in that particular case, we found that it ran anywhere from well enough to very well. But there's a full article on that at MacTech.com, and there's a new series of articles that we have with Intel. If you're of the programming type, if you're looking to do efficient Intel code. We've got some great stuff that we worked with Intel engineers on. It's not available anywhere else except for Mac Tech, and it's how to go beyond just being universal. It's how you write truly efficient code.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on today, and hopefully we'll send a lot of new readers over to Mac Tech. It's a really great magazine. I can vouch for that myself. And thank you for supporting the Macintosh community all these years.
Thanks. Our pleasure, and thanks for doing the podcast and shows. We appreciate it and appreciate all you guys do. So,
thank you, Neil.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was our interview conducted earlier with Neil Tichton, the publisher and editor-in-chief of
Mac Tech Magazine.
He has all the same hats on that I do, but he probably gets paid a lot better than I do.
Oh, I think so.
That's what happens when you run a free website, right? Mm-hmm. Like ours. Mac Tech is really good. If you guys are into the Macs, that's a magazine you really should subscribe to. It's not only geared to programmers. I've heard other Mac users say, oh, yeah, I've heard about it, but I'm not a programmer. So
Right. Trust
me, even if you're not a programmer, you're going to get a lot of knowledge from this magazine. You're going to be better Mac users. Take more advantage of that machine than you already are.
Yep.
So you might even get a free copy. I mean, can't
that's
beat
true.
That. That's the best.
That's
yet.
A generous offer.
There's, there are three, I think, right now, really good Mac magazines. Maybe four.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked into Mac Home in a long time, so I can't speak for that. I used to rag on Mac Attic,
mm-hmm.
and I took all that back a while ago because that's a really good magazine.
Yeah.
Magazine now. Excuse me, I got some kind of a hiccup going. You ever hear of a hiccup?
I know what they are.
Yeah, it's half hiccup, half burp. I get those occasionally. I don't know what the heck that is about. Mac World, I think I think right now Macworld's about the best it's ever been.
Yeah.
It's a little skimpy, but I think that's more of a state of the industry than the state of the magazine. Mm-hmm. And Mac Tech is really good. So,
yep.
You know, Neil was talking about the readers want more ads. Mm-hmm. And I almost got the impression that he maybe had thought that was a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first got into the Mac. Well, I don't want to say when I first got into the Mac. When I first subscribed to a couple different Mac magazines. Let's say I had Mac Week, Mac User, Mac World. And back then, I really looked forward to the ads. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you found out some of these really cool things that it's from companies that don't advertise anywhere else.
Yep.
And that's nowadays everybody advertises on the internet, but not enough of those companies do. They think they're going to come out with this great product and not advertise it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The only place you're seeing them is in the back of magazines.
Yeah.
You know, they need to get the word out a little bit more into some of the Mac websites, like, well, I don't know, mymac.com would be a good start.
Yeah, it would be.
But I understand why people want more ads, because that's where we find these products that you may have never heard about. You're only going to find it right there.
Yep.
And I always liked going through old... You know, what's fun is to go back through, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, that we should probably try to pick up some old copies of Macworld or Mac User or whatever from, say, pre-99, and go through some of the ads and share those with the listeners maybe once every couple months on the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, comparing the prices then, and then jumping on eBay and seeing if we could find exactly the same thing, and how much it would cost us right now on eBay. I think that would be fun. That would be cool to do. If anybody out there has any old, I don't know, Mac User or Macworld magazines pre-2000 that they would like to donate to the cause, let me know, and we can work something out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really appreciate it. I think that would be some fun things to do.
Yeah.
That's our podcast this week. We're going to be back next week. Do we got any interviews lined up?
Nothing lined up right now.
Nothing lined up, so we're completely open. Maybe we'll have a surprise guest, or...
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We like to hear back from you. We do have a telephone number. You can call and leave a message.
Yep.
Do you remember the phone number, Chad?
I believe it is 199...
No,
it isn't. It's 1-801...
Yeah. No.
938-5559.
He was looking at me with questioning eyes. Am I getting this right? Can we pause the recording? No, keep going.
So 1-801-938-5559 for our Skype voicemail.
Yeah, or you can just send an email to tim@mymac.com. Tell us what's on your mind. Let me know if you think I should upgrade to a MacBook Pro now. Wait. Should Chad get a MacBook? I think so. Chad needs a MacBook. His iBook's just not powerful enough for him.
You need a powerful machine, boy.
I want something that'll run me some Intel stuff.
We want some Intel.
I want some Microsoft on my Mac.
Intel in the house, boy! We'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.